Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In the history of this program, I think there have been few guests who are likely to provide more actionable intelligence about a topic of surpassing importance to our country than the woman who is giving generously of her time today for this full hour. Her name is Xi Van Fleet. She is a Chinese expatriate who lives now in Northern Virginia. She is a remarkable woman who burst on the national stage as a result of an impassioned address she made as a citizen, as a mom in the Loudoun County School Board recently. Her remarks are of great importance, as were a rather more thorough treatment of the subject that I was privileged to experience in the course of my friend Debbie Georgiadis's superb America Can We Talk program in Dallas, Texas, called Women for Freedom. Xi Van Fleet is a woman for freedom. And as we're going to discuss in the course of this program, she has had hard experience with what people who are doing things very like those that are now in action in our country did to her and the Chinese people in the course of Mao's bloody, horrific, repressive, totalitarian cultural revolution several decades ago. I'm thrilled to have Xi with us. As I said, I had the privilege of meeting her at that program in Dallas, and I commend to everyone her longer presentation there, including a very important PowerPoint presentation that will be posted, if it's not already there, at americacanwetalk.org. Xi Van Fleet, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It is so great to have you with us, and I'm really privileged to know you.
Thank you so much, Brent, for inviting me to your show.
Well, it really is something that I've been anxious to do for some time and only found out how to get in touch with you very recently. So forgive me for not being more rapidly engaging with you than this, but let's make the most of our time together today. Start, if you would, Xi, with your life story. What happened to you and your family during the Cultural Revolution that was such a formative and traumatic experience?
First of all, I have to explain that my story is not unique. No one in China escaped the Cultural Revolution. And some stories are more terrific. But anyway, so when the Cultural Revolution started, I was a first grader and turning seven. I did have one semester of so-called normal schooling. And then the Cultural Revolution started. And so overnight, everything was upside down, and school was closed. And I saw the what's called a big poster, big character poster everywhere. Everywhere there's a war space, there's a poster there. And I was.
And what did they represent, those posters?
Okay. What it is people writing things, criticize something, criticize students, criticize teachers, teacher criticize other teachers. And so it is just criticism.
And when you say criticism, I think really this amounted to denunciation, didn't it?
Denunciation, attack. But yeah, in Chinese term, it's criticism. It's attack. It is a verb, attack of other people. Yeah. So I was too little to understand the real content. But anyway, I do remember that in the classroom, and the teacher wrote on the blackboard that no school for 3 days, and that sign stayed there for 2 years. So school was just closed, and so we were just free to go, and I went to many so-called struggle sessions, and the thing that this word people started to pick up, start to hear this word, and it's just a meeting of denouncing someone, and so every day it's just a different person. And one day I was there, and it turned out that the person was being denounced was my friend's father, and she was next to me. She was horrified. So did I. And also I went to one struggle session that was the governor of Sichuan province. That's where I'm from. And so it was chaos. And
she, just let me ask, when you say these were meetings, in many cases they were just sort of spontaneous things in the streets, weren't they? And people surrounded the object of the struggle session, the person being denounced, and they were made to wear signs and dunce caps, I think, and in some cases were physically abused. No,
definitely. I'm not quite sure. Sometimes it's organized, sometimes, but a lot of times there's a truck parade of those people. They have big signs of their names crossed out, and then every place, like every what's it called working unit, they have their own struggle session. So it's everywhere. It's not just one.
And when their names were scratched out, I guess that was a form of canceling. Wouldn't we call it today?
Canceling. That's all. The whole thing is about canceling. Yes, canceling. And I did not personal witness beating and killing, because most of those things happened in colleges and high schools. And I was, because I was in elementary school. So, and even in elementary school, the students attacked teachers, but not deadly.
But she, when you mentioned that you were standing with a classmate of yours, a friend whose father was being subjected to this mistreatment, and she was horrified. Talk about the focus that the Red Guard and the Chinese communists loyal to Mao specifically engaged in to try to turn children against their parents.
Okay, that is another topic, that's indoctrination. And that is always, but during the Cultural Revolution, it went extreme. We were always told to report on others, and if they say something not politically correct. But during the Cultural Revolution, it went to the extreme that that children turned their parents in, and husband turned wife in, and the other way around. And it was commonplace, absolutely commonplace.
And I remember you were describing in your talk in Dallas on Saturday that you had a family member who was considered to be an enemy of the people. Talk about her and what that meant for your own family and experience.
Okay, that was actually before the Cultural Revolution. That was the beginning of the Chinese rule, the communist rule. And so when Mao took over China, the first thing they did is the land reform. Land reform is just basically categorized. So if you have so much land and you don't work on your land, you have to employ people, you're a land owner. And that's enemy class. And my little story was my family, on my mother's side, there's two uncles. And they both have land, and they're prosperous peasants. So, but one became an opium addict. So he was fortunate enough, lucky enough to waste all his fortune before land reform. So he became a proletarian, red class. The other one was black class, which is class enemy. And since that time, and if you are classified as a class enemy, that stay with you and pass on to your children. And so
And so, and while, and that's an important clarification, this relative of yours was targeted as a black class enemy of the people, individual before the Cultural Revolution. Did the stigma of her status persist with your family? Were you subjected to special treatment or under special constraints because of that family tie?
Yeah, it's always. You're always affected by your relationship and of your family. And actually, guilty by relation is a big, big issue. A lot of family that their relatives, for example, brothers or uncles that lived overseas, such as Taiwan and America, that is the worst. And then you are categorized as enemy suspect or class enemy. So it's, it is never just the individual. That's the key of Marxism, grouping. They always group people together.
This is, we're jumping around a little bit, and I apologize, but I'm so fascinated by your own personal experience with these various techniques for dividing and conquering people that Mao really perfected during the Cultural Revolution, especially. You are talking about, of course, the phenomenon of class warfare as a mechanism for accomplishing this. And just walk us through some of the other means by which it was applied. You mentioned guilt by relationships, but what other vehicles were used to vilify people and punish them?
Okay, in the very, very beginning, as I described, they have two camps. One is class enemy. So if you're a landowner, you're class enemy. And the other is, they call it people. People. Simply people, because they're people, the others are not even human. So,
and that term, the other, is very important here, isn't it? It's a way of characterizing everybody who is considered to be in the wrong group, the black class, if it, as in this case.
Here, I want to really mention an ad was popping up for a while on YouTube by this organization called prosperus.org. They have an ad in YouTube, and it said, the 1% and the people. And it's like, it's basically Mao's verbiage. Yeah, 1% and the people. So the 1% are not even people, they're enemies. But anyway, so let me go back to how they classify people. So land-owning class, how many of them? China was really a poor country. So I think during that land reform, they actually physically got rid of like 1 million landowners because they are influential landowners. So, and then Mao needs more enemies. So what he did is he expanded that enemy class by bringing in counter-revolutionary, rightists, bad influencer, traitors, whatever. The last one he brought into that category is intellectuals. So all this are class enemy. So, but at that time, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just anyone can be a class enemy, just like racists here. At first, we understand it's an individual. Now it's like a group.
Right. We're gonna come back to what is happening here and its implications for our country in a few minutes. But I just want to lay out that this discussion is not a hypothetical one or your projection of what could happen. It's what happened to you, what happened to your country, what happened to people like you in China. And I wanted to, you know, sort of get this idea across that this was part of a deliberate, carefully orchestrated, albeit somewhat chaotically, but nonetheless purposeful effort to both vilify and destroy anybody that
Mao,
the Red Guard, you know, the cultural revolutionaries, whatever you want to call them, deemed to be in the way of their ultimate goal of achieving and consolidating complete power. So talk, if you would, I'm looking at your slide deck. And again, our guest is Xi Van Fleet. She is an American citizen by choice who fled communist China and has become a phenomenon, I think it's fair to say, as a result of testimony that she gave before the Loudoun County School Board in Northern Virginia about some of the things that are happening in our public schools here, as well as in our country more generally. And we're going to talk more about that with her in a bit. But Xi, you mentioned three sort of lines of effort, lines of attack, if you will, in cultural Marxism. Walk us through those and how they are central to this effort to attain and exercise complete power.
Yeah, so I would say that Mao's approach was kind of, in a way, is kind of crude. It's just class. He never let go class. Even though after the land reform, there's no class left. Everybody was poor except those in power. So there's nobody own any land and or property, but he would not let go class warfare. So the class war, the class enemy that I had now can be put on anyone who step out of line. And that is the key. It's not class anymore, but I don't know how many quotes he had about class warfare. He had a little book. He wrote a little pamphlet. It's called Class Conflict Theory, kind of like I call it CCT, kind of like a CRT, but CCT. And we remember the quotation, like one of them, Mao said, class conflict should be talked about daily. Never let it go, because that's so crucial to the success of our socialism. So, but it's no longer class. It is a way to control and So if you stay off online, the worst thing is the bad influencer hat. That can be on anyone.
And was, I think, is the point. And one couldn't be sure whether it would be you the next day, which fed the imperative of denouncing others, right? I mean, it was you or them. And in that case, most people sought to make sure they were thrown under the bus. This was in the interest of sowing division, but this was just one of the three elements of that program. Walk us through division, deconstruction, and destruction, Xi, if you would, please.
Yeah, so when people are so divided and you don't know, today you're in the red camp, tomorrow you will be the black camp. So people watch, they watch everybody else. And then a lot of people would report so that a personal enemy, you know, they just report so that, you know, it can end up, that person can end up in the black camp. So There's fear among people. When people are fearful and divided, it's easy to control, right? So, and of course, that is only part of the game. The real game is to destroy the tradition and the history, so Mao can implement himself as the savior of China, as the sole ruler, and his Mao Zedong's thought were being the ruling. The ruling ideology for the entire China. So that
which is all the more extraordinary given the thousands of years of history of the Chinese people and their culture and so on, their civilization, really.
It is just amazing. So that's the second step is deconstruction, which is to criticize everything that is traditional. So,
as you say, relentlessly criticize. If you weren't adequately criticizing it, that itself could be evidence, I assume, of your inadequate solidarity with the right camp.
Yes, and so the hat that he gave to the Chinese heritage and history is feudalism. So it's all feudalism. And it's all bad. It should be get rid of. So, and that's what he we call, or he called, four olds: old idea, old tradition, old idea, old tradition, old habit, and old custom. They should all be destroyed. So first of all, they're all feudalist, all bad. And then the last step is destroy them. Destroy them, physically destroy them. And so first of all, the Chinese, the history was totally rewritten. And the Chinese literature, beautiful Chinese literature, was not taught to us. But physically, they have destroyed things like temples, statues. My goodness, when I saw the people putting on statues there, it just brought back vivid memory of Cultural Revolution. Any statues was destroyed. And anything such as vases, antique, as long as it's old. And red guards know nothing. Anything that looks old, destroyed. Clothes and...
And just say a word, if you would, about the Red Guard, because they played such a central role in this revolutionary activity. Who were they? How did they become Red Guard? And what kinds of purposes did Mao use them for?
Okay. This is, Red Guards are students, first of all. They were students that had been indoctrinated so thoroughly. So they are just basically Mao's private army. So Mao started the revolution by unleashed the Red Guards, started in Beijing in universities and high schools, and then quickly spread out to the whole country. And Mao openly backed them. And these young people were just like Antifa, just like the college students we saw on campuses today. You know, those conservative speakers, they just said that's their field day. They were free to do whatever. And then the first thing they did is demolish the law enforcement and the court system. And we have a word for it, 杂乱公检法. So they got rid of, because no one can stop them. No one dared to stop them. So they just went ahead and did everything, destroyed. They went door to door on the street, to go to people's house and pull out the antique furniture, antique vases, whatever old picture, and just smash them, burn them, and draw a lot of crowd. Some of them just like 12, but because they could do it. And then they even made up rules. One of the rules made, this is a story I heard from other people, and that they just decided anyone draw 1,000 yuan from bank is an exploiter, is an oppressor, because they have so much money. If you do that, you will be denounced. So there was one adult. He went to the bank and drew 1,000 yuan. The Red Guard beat him to death on the spot that he was an exploiter and he was oppressor. And
step back for 1 second, because I think it's important to this story to remind us, how did this come about? Why did Mao need to engage the Red Guard in this kind of mayhem and class warfare? He had actually, of course, been the principal figure in the original communist revolution in China, and had been for many years the undisputed ruler of the People's Republic, but not at this particular moment. And remind us the time of the Cultural Revolution start, if you would, too.
Yeah, this is really important to understand. So the Cultural Revolution started in 1966 and lasted 10 years until Mao's death in 1976. Why would Mao launch Cultural Revolution? And it is because that Mao made some serious mistakes in his movement, such as Great Leap Forward, that resulted, I don't know, 40 million deaths. I don't know the number. Starvation of a whole village. Everyone died. That kind of a disaster. And
because he was experimenting with socialism, basically, or communism, and depriving people basically of the means of providing for their own, you know, subsistence, let alone prosperity.
That itself is like a big, big topic of, but anyway, so he got some criticism from within his party. So he lost some esteem because people just kind of questioned his leadership. Because of that, he launched the Cultural Revolution.
So in order to restore his authority, he had to go to these extreme measures, he thought, and did. And as the Red Guard did these rampages, and as the struggle sessions proliferated, and as children were turned against their parents and neighbor against neighbors and colleagues at work and so on, the environment had to have been absolutely poisonous, as well as terrifying. You were a child at the time, but just give us a little bit of your own sense of it, as well as, you know, sort of your family experience, because I think it's important to us to contemplate what it means if we indulge in a similar kind of behavior in our own country. Something I think we're going to talk about now is afoot here.
Yeah, I think to me, it was total confusion. It's after I had no idea why and why we're doing all this and so first of all it's like a violent. At first it was just the big character poster. It's just words against others and eventually got violent. And I live in Sichuan province. There was a city there called Chongqing, and that is the defense, a lot of defense industry. Even tanks were employed. And I don't know who is fighting who and about what. And they're all for Mao. Just get it. It's not like one is against Mao. They're all for Mao. And the question is, who was more loyal? Who was more pure ideologically? So, and
Xi Van Fleet, let me just ask you, if I can, because I want to segue to the obvious implications of what you're describing here for our own time, our own country, and our own future. But before I do, just there were several other themes that you emphasized in your presentation to the America Can We Talk program in Dallas that I wanted you just to take another moment to highlight. Chaos. We've talked a bit about the cancel culture, but indoctrination. Just quickly on those three points, why are those so important to the success of this kind of cultural revolutionary?
Indoctrination absolutely is the key, and is the key for Mao to control the population, especially the young. That's why he was able to mobilize the Red Guards, the college students and high school students. Okay, so indoctrination was absolutely the key. And the CCP knows the importance. So the very first thing they did after they took over power in 1949 is to gather all the school teachers, because those school teachers are from old China. They have to be quickly trained, and they have to be indoctrinated first. So they were gathered and they were given intensive training of Marxist and communist ideology day and night, and they have to pass the examination before they could return to the classroom. So that's step one, and so they were in that way they were able to teach students the new ideology, and all the textbooks were replaced, and Marxist ideology was injected into every subject matter, no matter how irrelevant it is, and the history was rewritten, and we were taught, and we had the songs that we sing is that our real parents are the party, the CCP and Mao, and so the loyalty is obviously not even questionable. It's to Mao, and that's what we're trained as. So that's why the Red Guards could do whatever Mao asked them to do. If Mao asked them to kill their parents, they would do it.
And did in many cases. So, Xi Van Fleet, when you look at the chaos that was deliberately inspired, the destruction of the culture, of everything that was old, the habits, the traditions, and so on, and the institution of this radical ideology and its priorities of the party and this, you know, Mao's cult of personality, as they called it, and the destruction of the nuclear family, one might say, that reinforced the indoctrination and put everybody at risk of denunciation and perhaps destruction. These are things that you have warned now at the school board level in Loudoun County and on Tucker Carlson's show and in other places, and I'm so pleased again to have you here with us today. You see happening in America at the moment, you know, not fortunately the full-on violence that has accompanied, you know, the denunciation, the struggle sessions, and so on, but certainly the destructiveness of those in non-physical ways, the reputational harm, the marginalizing, the canceling. Talk about what you see as the impetus behind all of this in America at the moment, and at whose hands?
You mean in America?
Yes.
Yeah. The only thing I can say is that the radical left, and so and those are the people that really is pushing this Marxist ideology to the students, to the young people. That's why they are so eager to implement CRT to public schools. They want to formally introduce it to public schools, to elementary school, to start as early as possible. And I think that that's why Biden wants to the government to have kindergarten, right? They want to start as early as possible. And
Jeep, let me just back the lens up just for a second, though, because going back to what you just said a moment ago about China, obviously capturing the teachers was a prerequisite to beginning to get that kind of curriculum widely adopted. How did that come about in the United States? Have you studied that, given thought to it?
Yes, I did. Absolutely, because I've seen that in college and universities. As basically, that is controlled by the left. And there are so many teachers are so radical in their ideology. And that's the ones, those are the people that train the students, including teachers. So many, it's for decades, but they're getting worse. So because we have teachers, just like Mao trained the Chinese teachers to teach Mao's ideology or the communist ideology to the Chinese kids, we're doing it here. It's subtle. I call it infiltration. It's not like they teach a course about, you know, Marxist or communist ideology or CRT. No, it is those when the teachers are indoctrinated, that will come through when they have any interaction with their students. Just like, okay, so I don't have to, you know, to prove. I have a proof. That is the California teacher,
yes.
Gabriel Geip,
right.
By Project Veritas. Mm-hmm. He actually provides the, you know, the proof for me. I don't have to find someone. You know, he volunteered to prove my case.
A prime example. he may not have known he was volunteering, but he did lay the case out. That's for sure.
Yeah, and he wanted to train his students into revolutionary, and he could do it in 180 days, better than Lenin, who asked for 4 years. That's what it is. He did not have. He taught government. That's the danger. That even if we're fighting CRT, we can get rid of it kind of ban it. We still have to deal with the teacher who were indoctrinated so much that they are the ones with our kids. That's why I said we have to have a camera in the class so we can see.
No, that's such a critical point. A project Veritas in every classroom. Xi, let me just ask you this, because what you've described is bad enough, but as you know, not least because of your own personal activities that have brought you some celebrity, shall we say, some notoriety, some criticism for sure. It's not just the teachers any longer, is it? It's the administrators as well. And it seems, as in Loudoun County, the school board itself, an elected body. How extensive is this infiltration, as you put it, and the danger that it represents?
I think school is a focus for us because that's not just school, it's our future, the future generation. But the communist infiltration is complete. There's no place that we don't see it. And even in the military and in workplace, it's just everywhere. And one of the things that it really hurt me to see that Americans are now afraid, are so afraid. And so in the workplace, and people don't say what they mean, or they pretend to say what they don't really believe. And that's cultural revolution. That is the essence of cultural revolution, that nobody dare to say the truth and what they believe in. So that's why we hear the noise, we hear the voice so loud on the left, because the majority was silent.
This is such a critical point. What you have personally experienced in the context of the Chinese Cultural Revolution, and what you are witnessing in, you know, your own county government and school system.
And workplace
is sufficiently similar, if not virtually identical, to make the most profound alarms necessary. As you say, the communist infiltration is complete is a stunning statement, I think, probably to most Americans, even if they are aware that there are problems. But you're suggesting that there are not just individual problems. There is a pattern. There are dots to be connected here. And when you do, the cultural revolutionaries of our time and in America are very far advance towards their goal of dominating thought, of dominating speech, of canceling those who have not class issues, but in this case racial issues, or what can be imputed to be racial issues, and they must be marginalized, they must be punished for doing so. And that it's across the various institutions in our country, our media, our academic institutions, of course, businesses now, the military, as you say. So as you look at this, Xi, what are you finding is the response to the sorts of warnings that you're making? Are people finding more credible the fact that you've lived through this, and perhaps that you are especially important to listen to, because unlike most of us, you've come to this country voluntarily for its freedoms, and you're watching them imperiled.
Yeah, I do think that a lot of people that I talk to said they did not know that this is nothing new. What is happening here is nothing new. It happened before, and it's the same thing. But
same
the problem
playbook.
Is, yeah, they the history was not taught. We know everything about World War II. We know pretty much everything about Nazi Germany. And in the early days of the History Channel, people joked that's Hitler Channel, right? It's just a World War II, Hitler, this, that. But we never really learned as Americans the crimes of communism, and especially Cultural Revolution.
This is such an important point, Xi. And why do you think that is?
I think it's by purpose. I always think it's by design, because we have so many Marxists that they admire Lenin, they admire Mao. They want to use the same tactics to reach their to reach their goal, to grab power. So they would not want people to know. They would not. And that's so important. When people realize, wow, seriously, this is happening in China, in Mao's Cultural Revolution, this is Marxism, this is communism, they will reject. I think I provide this valuable story that I need. That's why I feel so passionate about it. I will tell the story to American people, whoever want to listen to,
well,
and wake them up.
Praise the Lord for you doing that. And I'm so grateful that you're doing it here at Secure Freedom Radio. Let me just ask you about one thing that you alluded to there. We have been encouraged to believe, and I think you're absolutely right, it's been very much with the active involvement and direction of the radical left, whether you call them communists, whether you call them Marxists, whether you call them socialists or progressives or liberals, the radical left, most especially, has insisted that there is a profound difference between the communists, the Soviet Union, China under Mao, and the Nazis. And in so doing, and Dinesh D'Souza has done some extraordinarily important work, you know, dissecting all of this in several of his books and movies. But gee, I'd be very interested in your thoughts about this. When you look at National Socialism, which of course is the full name of the Nazis in their program, and Soviet or Chinese communism, is there really a dime's worth of difference between the techniques, the purposes, the ideology, really, of the two? And are we being deceived when we are told, oh, look over there at those terrible Nazis, but avert your gaze from the horrors which under Stalin and Lenin and Mao and Pol Pot and, you know, so many others, the Kim dynasty in North Korea, and more, have inflicted upon the world that makes the Nazis look like pikers.
I listened to Dinesh D'Souza, and I totally agree with him that Nazi is left, radical left. They're not on the right. They are on the left, and the tactics are very, very similar. And I think in a way, a lot of the totalitarian regime have to use the same similar tactics. And I have to say here, I have to say that in China they use class, okay, to divide people. And by the time Cultural Revolution, the class doesn't mean anything. Everyone was not even thinking, does it make sense or not? They just want to survive. They want to survive the day so they don't end up in the black camp, right? But the radical left, what they use is a whole lot more sophisticated because they have to upgrade the cultural Marxism to deal with American people who is a free people. So what they use, like the racist and just think about it. I ask people, why racist is such a terrible label? Why? Why people are scared of being called racist? It's because Americans are not racist. They do not. They hate racism. They are anti-racism. That's why they do not like to be called racist. That is the power of the radical left. They use the goodness of American people to
that's fascinating to
terrorize them.
Yeah, to divide them.
And we should
and to separate. Yeah, to separate us from each other for the purposes of controlling us. You know, the techniques are unmistakably similar to those you experienced in communist China, of course. And let me just ask you one point. I had an opportunity recently to discuss this with a prominent national figure. And the question was, how do you describe those who are, you know, promoting so aggressively this agenda of dividing and deconstructing and destroying our own country? And he has set his sights on this term socialism, because he thinks it's something that is accurate as far as it goes, but also that it's something that can be accepted by the American people. Whereas if you call those who are really promoting all of this, Xi, communists or even Marxists, then that may be beyond the pale. That might be something that they feel is you know, unacceptable, or at least unjustified. You're an expert in this from hard experience, as well as obviously, you know, the study that you've given it since you've come to this country. How do you think we should be describing what we're up against?
This is so important. Like Confucian said, you have to name things properly. You have to name things as it really is. I dropped the whole word, the term socialism, because it doesn't mean anything anymore. It is so diluted. First of all, my indoctrination when I was in China is socialism is the initial stage of communism. And so American people need to know every so-called communist countries call themselves socialist countries. They never call even South Korea and North Korea don't call them communist country. It is a socialist country. But I dropped this word term totally because it just doesn't mean it much anymore, especially by the left. They say, okay, the Nordic countries are socialist. They're not. They're capitalist country. So it is communist. We have to call it communist. I will not stop calling it communist. I would not even call it Marxist. I love Mark Levin's book, American Marxism. But to me, Marxism is still not proper enough because Marxism is a philosophy and it's a theory. And Karl Marx never implemented it. He just remained a theorist. It was Lenin that implemented, and that is communist, and it's communism, and the Mao. So it's communism. It's communist.
This is such an interesting point, and I think I can argue it both ways. I completely agree with you that socialism has been adulterated and confused most Americans about what it really entails. But it seems to me, to some extent at least, both socialism and even communism describe an economic model and theory. And while, as you say, Marxism is a theory as well, in practice, it has proven to be an instrument of obtaining and wielding power. And the communists have done that for sure, and with murderous effect, as we've been talking about. But getting the branding of this right is so important. And Xi Van Vliet, I think what you are doing to bring your personal witness and testimony to American audiences, both about the nature of this enemy and their designs, their purposes, their techniques, and the extent to which they are well advanced in achieving them, is of such surpassing importance. And I really want to just commend you for stepping up, for being so forthright and so courageous in interviews and in public presentations. And I would love to know, how can people support you and what you're doing and learn more about it and you know, be part of an effort to ensure that your voice is heard as much as we can, because it's absolutely, I think the future of the country is on the line in part about whether we do understand the nature of the enemy and we respond appropriately to the threat it poses us.
Yeah, I have to say that, I am not, I was not a public speaker. I never dreamed that I would become a public speaker. But now, yes, I would speak to, and I would like people like you to invite me to their platform and to speak. I would go to any event and whoever invite me, I will go and I would speak to the American people. And also I'm asking the Chinese Americans to step up, to tell their story. And this is so important. And not only that, I ask people who experience communism, who are patriots, immigrants, speak up.
And I think more generally this point, and I think I said it to you when we met in Dallas, that people like yourself, foreign-born American patriots, are absolutely vital to the fight we're in right now, because you understand far better than most of us just how much is on the line and how perilous the times are and how perishable are the freedoms that most of us here, born here, take for granted. Xi, let me just ask you, is there a website that they can go to invite you to address people? And I want you to reserve on attending every event that you're invited to. I'm sure there will be many that you can't attend, but certainly it behooves all of us to support your work. Is there some place people can go to do that?
That's really funny. I did not have any social media presence before this. And a friend of mine just helped me to build Facebook. And so it's only like a month ago.
Okay. Well, give us your address there.
Yeah. So it's just my name, and it's public. So
and
you can just go there. And
Van Fleet, as it's pronounced. Xi Van Fleet. Let me just say in closing then, thank you for your time today and for this extraordinary contribution to our understanding the forces that are at work to bring a cultural revolution about in our country and to destroy it, to fundamentally transform it, as some of those radical leftists say, but nonetheless to have the practical effect of destroying the America that you freely came to and love, as we all should. I appreciate you so much and look forward to continuing this conversation, I hope, in the very near future. In the meantime, Godspeed in your work and blessings on you. Terrific inspiration.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to the rest of you for listening to this really important conversation with Xi, and I hope you'll come back to us again tomorrow for more Secure Freedom Radio. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with a word about a truly great American patriot in urgent need. Rich Higgins served in the U.S. Army and as a key civilian Pentagon official and senior strategist on President Trump's National Security Council. After he left the NSC, Rich continued advising Mr. Trump and others about the threats we are facing from enemies, foreign and domestic. He chronicled his experiences over the past 20 years fighting for America First in a terrific memoir entitled The Memo. Now this courageous freedom fighter is gravely ill due to severe complications caused by the Chinese Communist Party virus. He urgently needs help to defray the enormous costs of successive surgeries and a prospective organ transplant. I urge you to join me in contributing to a GoFundMe campaign named Medical Help for Rich Higgins. That's Medical Help for Rich Higgins at GoFundMe.com. God bless you, and Rich Higgins.